Harriet Hagman is a trial attorney for almost 30 years, a senior litigation counsel with New Civil Liberties Alliance. And I have her on to talk, and by the way, the website for them is nclalegal.org. I have her on to talk about Amy Coney Barrett. Good morning. How you doing, Harriet?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. Thank you. New Civil Liberties Alliance. Give me a little primer on that, if you would.
Well, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan law firm that focuses on restoring, constitutional order is the way that I would put it. Yeah. We focus most specifically on the separation of powers between the legislative, judicial, and executive branches and try to put constitutional guardrails on administrative agencies, making sure that our legislative branch is the one that legislates and that the executive branch is the one that carries out that legislation rather than making law.
Which just sounds like exactly some of the stuff that Amy Coney Barrett was saying yesterday, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So
I wasn't able to watch the entire hearing. I obviously was working, but I was able to catch some of it in the morning as well as highlights during the day.
Yeah, same here. I can't watch it all. I'm busy working, but I try to watch bits and pieces of it. And she said exactly that. She said it's not the state, it's not the court's job to legislate. It's laws need to be decided by the legislature and the executive branch. And so that's heartening. It's also could be, look, we get a lot of Supreme Court nominees on the when a Democrat gets to nominate someone, that jurist, that Supreme Court justice, I would say never fails to disappoint them. That judge then tends to do leftist rulings throughout their lifetime on the bench. However, you could look to other ones of the past that Republican presidents have nominated, and they have disappointed us. John Roberts is one. I don't think he's that good of a jurist, but there's others that have become liberals. We don't know. We're all gleeful that Amy Coney Barrett is getting nominated, but she may end up disappointing us on certain rulings. And I don't know if you even want to give us an insight into some of those that you might think might do that, disappoint us.
Well, I don't know that I could comment on that from her standpoint. But what I have been watching and what is interesting, what is important to me and for someone who does what I do, is someone who really is a student of the law. And I think that that has come across incredibly clearly during the course of these hearings, as well as 3 years ago when she was nominated for the Seventh Circuit. She clearly is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. She has the intellect to be on both the appellate court as well as the Supreme Court. She has the knowledge of the law. She has the knowledge of the history. I think that's one thing that a lot of people overlook in terms of the importance of an effective and good judge or justice, is that they understand the history of the law. They understand the history of our country. They understand the history and the framework of our Constitution, because all of those things are important. As they say, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And if you don't understand the history of something, oftentimes you can misinterpret what was intended and that sort of thing. So what I'm so interested in is her ability to actually understand and apply the law. And I was very heartened by her understanding of the separation of powers, that there is an executive branch for a reason, there is a legislative branch for a reason, and then there's the judicial branch. And the three have very unique roles to play in our form of government. And I think what you're pointing out is that sometimes judges don't recognize that. And I'm hoping and hopeful that she will that she will judge exactly the way that she has described it in her testimony before the Senate.
Yeah, that's true, because I don't know who do you feel are some of the best jurists your lifetime, my lifetime?
Well, clearly Scalia, mm-hmm. Thomas. Those are two of them that have been at the forefront in our lifetime. Because of their adherence to what the Constitution is and what our government is. You've heard about textualism. You've heard about originalism. Those are things that are very important to a practicing attorney like me, because, again, I need to understand when someone comes to me with a problem or an issue, I need to look at the framework of that through the judicial lens. How is a judge going to look at this? What is the case law? What is the history? What is the precedent? And I have to do that because I have to be able to advise that particular person as to what our strategy should be, whether they have a claim, whether they should have a claim, that sort of thing. And so we all approach it from somewhat the same standpoint. And this can't be outcome determinative. Excuse me. It needs to be based upon the law.
So I'll let you get a drink there and go ahead, grab yourself a drink. Again, talking to Harriet Hagman, trial attorney of almost 30 years, a senior litigation counsel with New Civil Liberties Alliance, nclalegal.org, nclalegal.org, to find out more about them. So let me ask you a couple things. So you kind of touched on it in your answer there a little bit. There's so you like the fact that she understands the separation of powers. I also wonder, though, there's another thing that used to come up, and I haven't heard it come up this time, and that is the Constitution a living, breathing document? Or is it just what it's the founders intended? Because I hear this living, breathing, it's fluid, it can change, and Clarence Thomas Scalia tends to say, no, it's what the founding fathers meant, and we need to interpret it as it is, period. And then there's the others that think it's a living, breathing document. What are you picking up on that with Amy Coney Barrett?
I think that she falls in the former category. I think that she falls in the category with Scalia and Thomas. It isn't a living, breathing document. It says what it says, and it means what it says, and it says what it means. The First Amendment says what it says. The Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, these are the ones that we typically deal with. The Fifth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 10th Amendment.
How did the Commerce Clause give women a right to an abortion?
Again, that's what happens when you stray from the actual text of the document. And it is what happens when you stray from that original meaning. The Constitution doesn't answer all questions. And it's not designed to answer all questions. It provides us with the framework of the type of government that we're going to have. And what was unique about our founding and our founding fathers was that they recognized that we have in certain inalienable rights, meaning at the moment of conception, we have certain rights that are inherent in us. Why that was so unique is that by saying that those rights came from God rather than the government, our founders were saying, and I agree with this, that the government has no right to take them away.
Right.
So some of our foundational rights, our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, our freedom to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, our right to due process, our right to those types of to be tried by a jury of our peers, there are certain things that are inalienable that belong to us and that the government cannot take away. That is what our Constitution says, and that's the framework, especially of the Bill of Rights, in terms of how it applies to each one of us. If you start messing with that, if you will, and you start finding a right to other things outside of that, what you're doing is you are creating that living, breathing document, and anyone can interpret it in any way that they want to, and potentially in a way that takes away the very rights that it was designed to protect.
You just said
that's why it's...
Great, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's why it is so important that we interpret it and apply it the way that it is written. That's textualism, that's originalism.
And you said the Constitution doesn't answer all questions. Therefore, the court shouldn't answer all questions. There's times the Supreme Court will say, that's not our decision. You guys figure it out. Go back to the legislature. That's not our, because the court shouldn't answer all questions. Am I correct?
I agree with you. And that's where the legislature comes in. That's why we have Congress. Congress writes statutes, and they write statutes related to education. They write statutes related to health care. And the court can interpret those statutes, and they can interpret those statutes with the intent of what the law was. They can interpret those statutes based upon the words that were used. But it is not for the judges to rewrite the law. It is not for the judges to create law or rights out of whole cloth.
The other thing that we have a problem with is the name, the Supreme Court, as though it is a supreme being and what it says must go. And I've had other guests on that say, listen, they only issue opinions. And there's been presidents in the past who've said, well, I appreciate your opinion, but I'm ignoring it because it's only an opinion. And they said that it was not supposed to be we don't have three co-equal branches of government. The founding fathers didn't set it up that way. They meant the legislative to be the most powerful, executive close second, and the Supreme Court was third. It wasn't, and they had no enforcement mechanism, the Supreme Court. They're not supposed to be a co-equal branch. They're only supposed to issue opinions and guidance, but we've made them the Supreme Court. Agree or not?
Well, where I would go with that is to the extent that the judicial branch issues a decision that our legislative branch may disagree with, they can fix that. Go in and write a statute that changes it. That's where I think it is perhaps the point that your guest was making. I don't know. I don't know who was making the point that you were just describing. But the reality is that the legislature or Congress has the absolute ability, other than on constitutional questions. But, for example, let's talk about Obamacare. If Congress disagrees with a decision that is issued by a federal district court judge, an appellate court, or ultimately the Supreme Court, it is within Congress's authority to go in and rewrite or change that law. And they've done it throughout history. There have been times, many times, including on Title IX, for example. In the 1980s, there was the Supreme Court issued a decision on Title IX related to the Equal Access Act, essentially, the 1972 Act that made sure that if you receive federal funding, then you have to give equal access to women to girls and boys both. And Title IX has been in the news quite a bit lately. But in the 1990s, there was a decision that the Supreme Court issued that Congress disagreed with. So they rewrote the law. Hmm. They changed it. And at that point, then that's what the law is. And so that's where I think there's the real breakdown, and where I disagree with where we've headed in this country is I think that there are some among us who want the Supreme Court to be a super legislature, mm-hmm. and that isn't what it should be.
No,
it doesn't write the law.
Right. It's not a supreme being. It doesn't have this all-powerful authority. The Founding Fathers gave it no enforcement mechanism for a reason. They don't have an army to go out and force what the Supreme Court rules. Another thing that where Clarence Thomas and Scalia seem to disagree sometimes were over precedent. Well, there was a precedent. Well, Dred Scott was a precedent. That was a wrong decision. I don't know. I where does Amy Coney Barrett stand on Amy Coney Barrett, I should say, stand on that whole idea of precedent? Because sometimes they almost use that as an excuse. It's because it was this way in the past, it means it's that way always. Well, no, sometimes that was a wrong decision in the past.
I agree with you, and I think that she does too. It's interesting that you raise that issue, because she has actually written on the issue of stare decisis. That's what that is. It's called stare decisis, a thing decided. And so what she has indicated is that she's absolutely willing to go back and look at previous cases and determine if they were wrongly decided. There is a Supreme Court decision that I wholeheartedly disagree with. And it's one that Justice Kagan relies upon quite extensively, including in some of the deference cases that they've had before them in the last year and a half. And it is a case that says even if the case was decided wrongly, it is important to keep that precedent in place. And somebody on the Supreme Court, I don't even remember now, who actually wrote that line. Even if it was decided wrongly, precedent or stare decisis is important enough that we need to keep it on the books, that we need to continue to follow that, even if it's the wrong outcome.
Well, that's...
I disagree with that. And I believe that, and I don't want to put words in her mouth. I can't speak for her, and I'm not her spokesperson or anything else. I've never met the woman. I'm clearly impressed with her. But she has at least given some idea that she is absolutely willing to go and look at the issues of stare decisis. And if she believes that a case was wrongly decided, she's willing to reverse it. And that is, I think, something that is very, very important for the reasons that you've described. There are decisions that have been wrongly decided in the past. Chevron and that entire line of cases, Brand X, that requires courts to defer to agencies and the expertise of agencies in lawsuits. that whole line of cases was wrongly decided and needs to be reversed. And we've been chipping away. We've been getting these issues back before the U.S. Supreme Court and lower courts as well. And we're hoping that we can get back to the point where judges just judge cases. They don't give any deference to an agency any more than they would an individual. So I'm very heartened by the fact that she is willing to look at this whole stare decisis issue and say, you know what, if it was wrong, we need to fix it.
Amen. And I can't believe somebody actually wrote that other statement. That seems absurd. Harriet, man, this was awesome. Great to have you on. Hope to have you on again. Again, Harriet Hagman is, again, a senior litigation counsel with New Civil Liberties Alliance, NCLA Legal.org, NCALegal.org. Thank you, Harriet.